Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is episode number 45, and Jimmy and I are so excited to welcome to the show our favorite resort TV host, Stacey Oswald. Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm great. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
We are so happy to have you on. We're very, very excited.
Well, I've been looking forward to it, and we've been working this out for a while, so thank you for being patient. My schedule's been a little bit uncooperative this summer. It's been a little crazy.
Well, that's always a good thing. I guess that means you're working.
Yeah, I know. It keeps me off the streets, keeps me out of trouble.
That's right.
That's right. So, Stacey, tell us, how did you, I know that this is probably the question you get all the time, how did it start with you and Disney? You've been doing this for, 9 years? Is that right?
Yeah, the first campaign was the top 7 must-sees, all you die-hard people out there. That premiered on 5/5 of 2005. Okay. And so I always say, like, on 5/5/05 and 06 and 07 and so on, I always have my Disneyversary, and I always feel like that's kind of the beginning of my reign, if you will. But it was a very impromptu thing, but, you know, I'm a firm believer of you live your way towards the life you're supposed to have. And so at the time I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and there's a lot of industry there, commercial theater, TV shows that film in Wilmington, and Atlanta is a really big hub for auditioning. So I had to drive to Atlanta for an audition for an infomercial, for a host of an infomercial. And while I was there, the casting director said, listen, we're doing this thing for Disney tomorrow, but we can put you on tape today so you don't have to drive back tomorrow. And the drive is like an 8-hour round trip thing. So you literally drive down, you say 3 lines, and you drive back in the same day. So I said, oh, that'd be so great. So they put me on tape, and I did a piece from the top 7 show about Summit Plummet, everyone's favorite.
My wife's favorite for sure.
I know. Doesn't it make your stomach jump a little bit? Did you do the hand gesture, though? I have to
know. We always do, yes.
Very good, very good. Anyway, so they put me on tape for it, and then I ended up getting a call back a few days later. So I drove back to Atlanta very happily, and the director was there, and I met with him, and there were a few other women there for the callback. And they had me learn some other copy off the cuff. You know, they wanted to see how quickly you could memorize, because for people that don't know, the show does have a script, but there's a lot that's ad-lib and a lot that's just improv. But there's no cue cards. There's no ear prompter, teleprompter. It's all either me memorizing it and then me ad-libbing. So anyway, so I did that, the callback, and within a couple of days, I got a call that it was down to me and a woman in L.A., and that I got it. So it was a very quick turnaround. They had done a national casting and seen, I guess, hundreds and hundreds of people. And so I guess all of that took longer than they thought. And so from the time I got the very first script to when I was standing in World Showcase at Sunrise was just a few days. Wow. So I remember, I'm from New York originally, and I had a trip planned to go see my family. And I remember going up there, and this is my very first hosting gig. And so I had done some theater and commercials, and obviously I was a dancer, a choreographer, I've been a performer, but I'd never been a straight-to-camera host. And so I remember visiting with my family and thinking, oh my gosh, like what have I done? Can I do this? And I had a real profound moment of holy Toledo, this is really happening. But I'm really one of those people that I leap and the net appears and I just believe that I'm going to land on my feet. And so I just said, you know what? They must have seen something in me and I'm where I'm supposed to be. So this has to be the right thing. So I just dove in and I learned and memorized like a crazy person for a few days. And so when I got to Orlando, I felt really excited. I was nervous, but that anticipation kind of nervous. I didn't at that point. Yeah. I was like, I can do this. There was no turning back. I wasn't doubting myself. I was just thinking, I had no idea what was going to happen. So it was that whole like, okay, what are they going to have me do? And where am I going to be? And I had never been to Disney World before in my entire life. So it was my very first time there. So I was literally seeing things for the first time. So I was there for 10 days. It took 10 days to do wardrobe and preparation and then shooting. We shot actually about 8 days worth that first time, and it was full on. I mean, it was 10, 12-hour days. It was intense and amazing, and I will never forget it. That was supposed to be for 1 year, and here I am, so woohoo, right?
That's fantastic.
Very grateful.
That's really neat. I love so many parts of that story that you had never been, and so many of those, you know, reactions to things, and, you know, now that you're more familiar with it, you know truly just how, you know, some of the neat details that you see and how exciting some of the rides are. And as we talked about some of the theming and, but you were seeing that for the first time. So some of that, reaction and improv maybe was just so genuine.
Absolutely. And yeah, when I go back, I mean, I'm not, I don't feel jaded at all by it. I don't feel like, oh yeah, I got to go back there. I know I've been there, done that kind of thing. I feel still so jazzed about it and still so, like it's the first time in many different ways. I mean, yes, because I'm doing new things, but also just every single time is different. And I work with different directors and different crew. And now, obviously, that I've been there for a while, I get to meet guests and get to just sort of experience all of that. So I get to stay in a different resort. So everything still is very new. Like, I don't feel like, oh, yawn. I got to go back and do that again. It's still very, very fresh. And so I love that. I mean, it just feels really like the first time every time, which is so fun.
Let me ask you, now you're in California. Do you get a chance to go over to Disneyland and visit often?
I have been a couple of times since I've been out here. And it's funny because when I first moved out here, people told me, listen, you're not going to be able to do Disneyland and California Adventure in the same day. So You just don't worry about that. You just have to pick a park. I'm like, okay. And, of course, obviously, you're thinking the scale of Disney World. And then I get there, and I'm thinking, what? Really? Okay. I mean, it's beautiful, and I love it because it's so classic, and it's obviously it's the original, and it's got a charm that is just distinctive to Disneyland. And people always want to say, which do you like better? Which Space Mountain do you like better? But I really kind of take them for what they are and what they bring to the table, and it's lovely. I mean, it's really a beautiful place, and it's a very different experience doing Disneyland than Disney World. But obviously, my heart belongs to Disney World.
We had we just did a show, I don't know, two or three shows back about Disneyland, which I've never had the chance to go. Jennifer's been, and one of our other co-hosts, Sam, has been. So they did a lot of the telling in that show. And you know, one of the things we discussed is that Disneyland is so much more locals versus tourists, and Disney World is the exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, a lot of people never spend the night at Disneyland or any nearby hotels. But it's funny because on my show, Veal Buzz Weekly, we had on the park announcers for Disneyland and California Adventure. So someone who says, you know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is a man named Bill Rogers, and he's been doing that for like 23 years and counting. And his wife is the park announcer for California Adventure. So when you're in California Adventure, you hear her. That's so it was really cool to see them in action, and we got to talk to them about their experience. And they had the very same reaction as far as, I mean, Bill Rogers does something like 90,000 announcements a year.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so he said, but still, it doesn't matter how many. He said, it still feels like just a wonderful lovely opportunity. I mean, you know you're making people happy, and you know that you're a part of really wonderful times in people's lives. I mean, people either go to Disneyland or Disney World when they're feeling good, or if they're not feeling good, you can bet they're going to feel good by the time they leave, because you just can't not.
Absolutely.
Even if you have to stand in line. I mean, you can't not feel good while you're there. It's just in the air, literally.
You know, I think another interesting thing is that in just thinking about it, you've kind of ingrained yourself. Like, you will always be Stacy from in the hotel room. Like, you could probably do 10, 20, 30 commercials, and people would probably forget that after some time. But, you know, you probably got a lot of staying power with being known as Stacy from Disney.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, it's funny because sometimes out here, if I'll go on an audition or if I'm on a job and someone will go, hey, yeah, we've seen you. We just spent the week with you, or my kids really like you. So it's funny. I mean, I do get, I was actually in a store like last week or week and a half ago, and I was checking out, and the woman looked up and she said, are you Stacy? Are you Stacy from Disney by Kid Club? They watch you on YouTube. So sometimes I'll get a random sighting out here, or I'll be in a Trader Joe's or something buying cucumbers or something, and someone will go, oh my God, it's you. It's you. I'm like, yes, it's me. It's you. Talking to
you. Who are you? How do I know you?
Yeah. So sometimes I do get that crossover. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I love it. I mean, I'm very honored to be a part of it. I'm very honored to have this opportunity, and again, just knowing that people are happy, or I'm helping families wind down, or having kids go to sleep or get excited. I mean, all of that means a lot to me, and obviously I get to interact with people on social media, and it's really nice to, I mean, how can you not feel good knowing you're making people happy?
Sure.
I love that. Well, it sounds like, you know, you talked about maybe the first time you set foot to record was your first time at Walt Disney World, but now you talk like a Disney nerd, and that's a good thing around here. You distinguish the difference between the history of Disneyland and how magical it is, no matter how many times you go to the parks. So obviously this is not just a job to you, but it sounds like you're a fan. If you have this is something I was thinking as I was watching some of the videos. If you were not there on a job and, you know, didn't have any script, improv or, you know, bare bones or otherwise, what would be your must do? What would be the thing you told somebody they had to do? Your favorite thing to eat? Do you have a favorite Disney must do?
Well, it's funny you say that, because a friend of mine was going to Orlando for her daughter, was in a gymnastics competition, and they only had one day to go to Disney World. And she was asking me, okay, what do we have to do? What are your must-dos if we only have one day? So for me, I love, and I'm so bad at these, so I'm going to say more than one thing. So I'm just telling you right now, I'm breaking the rule.
I'm sorry, I know the same thing.
My must-do is that there's not one. That's my must-do.
Right.
But I told her that definitely Animal Kingdom, because I love, obviously, Expedition Everest. I love the safari because I'm an animal crazy person. And I love how it just feels, it's so different. And you really feel like you have been transported and you go through dinosaur. And that was like an absolute, I was like, you have to definitely do Animal Kingdom. You know, I really truly do love roller coasters. So any chance for me to go upside down, backwards, forwards, higher the better, I'm a fan of that. Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith, I could ride that 10 times in a row. Okay. When we shot that, I had to do it like 3 times in a row, and I was in heaven. And then, obviously, Magic Kingdom, it is beautiful, even before the new Fantasyland updates, but it's classic. It's wonderful. I told them they had to finish the day there for the fireworks to get the really full button on the experience. Mm-hmm. And I just love how, you know, even within the different lands, I mean, you really do get such a different feel. I mean, I'm a sucker for the little, I love my little teacups. I love the lavender teacup. That's my
lavender teacup. I love that.
Yes. And this is the running joke now that I've never had a Dole Whip.
And
I know. This is
Stacey.
I know. It's just it's horrifying. So I've said to myself that next time I go, whenever that is, I'm just going to have to tell the producers, listen, I have to build in time to have a freaking Dole Whip because it's getting crazy.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret that I feel like it's been my purpose for the last week. I've been telling everybody this. It keeps coming up. If you have an orange leaf nearby, do you have that? The frozen yogurt place? I don't know if they have them in California. They have several, I know. Is that a familiar
Pinkberry's big out here.
Pinkberry, yeah. I feel like Pinkberry, do they make their own flavors? Is that, I think they might. I don't know. There are several chain frozen yogurt places that have the pineapple Dole soft serve. So you might be able to find one when you're traveling, even before you get back to film the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ride.
Still not as delicious as the one that comes from Aloha.
Absolutely not, because you don't have the Adventureland music and you don't have
exactly
the whole atmosphere. So you still need to stop and get one.
And yeah. I like the Dole Whip is fine, but for me, the Dole Whip float, where they put the actual pineapple juice in it.
That's what I'm hearing, because I love pineapple. I've been hearing that it has to be a floating Dole Whip.
Yes. There you go. So now you have to go back to make an update for the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ride and a Dole Whip.
So we're manifesting. So I'm going to say my favorite thing to eat, though I've never had it. There you go.
It's not the turkey leg?
No, because I am actually vegetarian.
There you go. So it probably would be.
And I'm pretty sure that the vegan vegetarian turkey leg would be heinous. So
it might be.
I'm going to go on a limb and say it wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I do love gelato, though. I do love gelato, but I'm going to say the Dole Whip because we're building it. If I build it, I will eat it. That's my thing. So I'm going to say a Dole Whip.
Okay.
Perfect. Well, hopefully it lives up to the hype when you come back.
I know.
So I have a question, kind of switching gears. You said you are a dancer, and I actually spent a lot of time dancing with dancers, and there's such a change from that to acting and to voiceover. How did you go from being a classically trained dancer to jumping in? Where'd you get your start thinking, hey, I might want to do hosting or voiceover work?
I've been a performer my whole life. I mean, I started dancing when I was very little, and I was a competitive artistic roller skater. That actually came first, and I started dancing because of that. I had to learn choreography for my routines, and so that's how I started doing ballet, and then I just fell in love with it, and then that just catapulted me in dancing in professional opera companies, and I went to Juilliard and did all of that and dancing companies. And I moved to the Midwest, to Louisville, and I was teaching there and also dancing with the ballet company. And I started, when I was teaching, they kept thinking I was a student. And so I was teaching dancers and actors, and they would say, oh, well, you should audition for this commercial too, because you look like one of the kids. So I would go on auditions, and I actually, the very first thing I ever booked ever on camera was a soccer game commercial, and it was all in Spanish, which I don't speak. But that was my very first commercial. And so I just kind of started to get involved with it there. And as you know, Jennifer in Cincinnati, so I would drive to Cincinnati and Columbus, and I would audition there and work there. And then I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was still dancing and doing that. And then I got involved in theater, and I started doing a TV series called 7th Street Theater that filmed in Asheville, North Carolina, and got some independent films. And so it all just kind of started to go from there. I mean, it is a different medium, but for me, it's just a different vein of performance. Mm-hmm. And I come from a big, loud, wonderful family, and so we were always doing crazy voices. I mean, all my stuffed animals have names and voices and storylines. So I think before I even knew it, I was doing voiceover. My father and mother are very funny and very animated. And so my dad was a great impersonator. And so we always, and still to this day, we'll have full conversations and no one is speaking in their normal voice.
That's amazing. I love that.
So like my recording booth in my house, I have all my stuffed animals in there, so I call it my playroom. And so my sisters and I, we all have these sort of ongoing little games, and we all have nicknames, and again, like, we don't really even call each other our normal names. And so that was, I think I was just sort of preparing for that without even knowing. I didn't know what voiceover was. I wasn't really cognizant of any of that. And then when I decided to, well, once I got the Disney job in 2005, it was really a catalyst for me of what else is going on. And I'm a really high risk, I have a high tolerance for risk. And so I said, well, let's see, where else can I be doing this? Well, let's go. I mean, I'm from New York. But I said, well, I've been in New York, I've done New York, what about LA? And so I said, well, I'm going to come out to LA and see what happens. And so when I got here, I didn't have a plan B. I came out here because I was going to be in the entertainment business, and I was casting a wide net. So I was doing on camera, and then I started doing voiceover. And I've been very fortunate that I get to do what I love every day in some form or fashion, be it on the mic or on camera, and now on the web with my show, which I write and host and produce. And so it's been really great because I really like change, and I love challenging myself and not necessarily knowing what's around the corner. So I love that every day there's a new challenge or a new, something new that I don't know if I can do, but I have to figure it out. I have to think on my feet. So that is really exciting to me because I think it just keeps my skills really sharp, and it forces me to just be in the moment and not worry about stuff or second guess, because you can't, you don't have time and you don't know what you're doing or you don't know what's happening. So I think I, if the long answer around is, I think I've been preparing to do this my whole life. It's just when the planets lined up and everything came together. And so I've been out here for about 7.5 years, and I love it. I really definitely feel like this is where I need to be. And every day I kind of get some kind of validation that I'm on the right path. It's not always easy. It's not always rainbows and moonbeams, but even in those low moments or those moments where you're kind of like, hey, hi.
Right.
Anyone want to give me a job? You just still know that there's learning in that and there's opportunity in that. And, you know, the old saying, it's where you grow is in the valleys, right? So
absolutely,
it's been good. For the most part, it's been good because I just have a pretty positive outlook as far as I've chosen to do this. No one's forced me to do it. So it's my choice. So I might as well be cheerful. And I always say to myself, bloom where you're planted. That's always kind of in my mind.
I think that's a great story, and, you know, pretty inspirational. My daughter is 15, and she is a dancer,
mm-hmm.
and that's all she likes to do is between dancing school and dance team at school. I did ask her once about doing, you know, just local theater, and she looked at me like I was nuts, though.
It's like, Dad, I'm not local.
Well, she's like, Dad, I don't want to talk in front of people. I'll dance, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, dance is amazing because it doesn't, you know, it is absolutely a universal language. And, you know, I would not trade... I mean, I'm not dancing, obviously, as much as I did, but I got to do everything I wanted to do with it, and I'm glad that it still certainly comes in handy with what I'm doing now. And having the movement capability and being able to walk and talk and twirl and jumps. I mean, it certainly has, I owe that all to my dance training. I mean, a lot of times you work with people and they really are kind of more static or they're not comfortable doing that. And so I'm grateful for it. It's something I know I'll always be able to do. And, you know, I'm also extremely proud of my parents because they really understood at a young age that I was not a typical child and I was very creative and I had this just, it was in my blood. I can't not perform. It's just, I wouldn't be breathing. So they really supported that love for me and were very, you know, when I came in the house one day and said, okay, I'm going to Juilliard, like that was it. I knew that's where I wanted to go. I didn't even really understand the whole process about some people don't get to go. I was just like, I'm going, that's it. And they were really supportive and it was a good compromise because it gave me an actual BFA degree. But I was able to be at the greatest conservatory in the world doing what I love. And so to this day, whenever I do anything in my career, you know, I share it with my family because they've always supported me and watched me dance in the living room for hours on end, and as I'm sure you do, you know, so, yeah, you know, it's one of the things I think it's a very precarious kind of career because you don't know, it's not like a linear thing that if you go to school and you do well, you'll get a job. There's no guarantee in any performance-based career.
Sure.
Even if you're talented and even if you work hard, sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's destiny, whatever you want to call it. But the cool thing about dance especially is that it teaches you things about life that you will use whether you choose to be a professional dancer or not. I mean, time management and self-motivation and the show must go on and, you know, just having that collaborative spirit of it's not just you, you have the whole ensemble to think about. I mean, there's a lot of things about it that will serve you in your life no matter what you do. So it's a win-win, I think.
Absolutely. Earlier you had mentioned your show on the internet. Where can people find that?
Oh, thanks for asking. It's VO as in voiceover, vobuzzweekly.com. And it's, gosh, we're up to like, I think 100, almost 130 episodes.
Wow.
And it's a great, I mean, the concept came as a result of myself and Chuck Duran, who's the top demo producer for voiceover, and we wanted to do a collaborative, creative, inspirational project, and so it's obviously morphed in the 2+ years that we've been doing it, but really it's coming to be, we talk to people on all sides of the business who are at the top of their game, whether it's an animation voiceover actor or an agent or a producer. And it really is studying the habits and behaviors of successful people, which is a universal human experience. So it's kind of cool because we have viewers in like 85 countries and they write to us and say, you know, I don't even want to be a voice actor, but it really was helpful to hear someone else's story about how they persevere through hard times or how they handle rejection or someone telling them you'll never be a success at this industry, you should quit. And so it's cool because people get to be inspired and motivated to whatever it is that their dream is. And so I like that we're putting out, like you guys, you're putting out content that is inspiring people and uplifting people and positive. And, you know, with so much craziness going on in the world, I love being a part of something that is about that and about celebrating people and lifting them up. So VOBuzzWeekly.com, it's free to watch. And, you know, you can go into the archives and you can see, I mean, we had Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy, and June Foray, and, you know, iconic people who have been around, who you know and hear, whether it's for TV promos or cartoons or films, and you may not even be aware of them, but now you get to put a face to the voice, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually came across the Bill Farmer. I just kind of heard an interview with him and was doing a little bit of research and looking at kind of that rabbit trail that is the internet, and ended up on Bill Farmer and Stacey Oswald. Like, it was kind of the best, you know, the best Disney collaboration I'd seen in a while. But so for people listening, there are Disney connections, which maybe gets them over that way to listen to you. But you're right. There's so many just life lessons that you can learn. I've only taken a couple minutes to look at it, but even just in this conversation, we're talking to you, the host of the must-dos and the top seven. But here you're offering advice about, inadvertently offering encouragement to parents of spirited children who dance in the living room all night. So there's always life lessons that can be learned from people willing to share them. So I really appreciate that kind of side of what you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm very much a work in progress, and I don't claim to be finished by any means, and I'm always challenging myself and always raising my bar for myself and making sure that I'm doing my best and being my best. But, you know, it's like, well, first, quick sidebar, the shirt that I wore when we did Bill Farmer was my shirt from the top seven when I was in World Showcase. So,
nice.
Yeah. Anyway, but I, you know, I feel like, I mean, I'm not a parent myself, but I have nieces and nephews and friends with kids. And I think that, you know, I was so blessed to have parents who gave me permission to be who I am. And I think that that's just a beautiful gift. In addition to parents taking care of and loving each other, I think that when you allow your children to literally find their own voice and be who they're going to be and support them and encourage them, I think that that just turns them into fearless, incredible young adults and adults who then pay it forward. And so, you know, I work with a lot of kids on different jobs that I do out here. And so it's interesting to see the different kinds of parents who support the kids or who are living vicariously through their kids. And so it's just, you know, for me, it's always a good lesson to see kind of what's working. And because I love human behavior, I love studying people, I love to listen to what people don't say and look at what their actions are. And so I think if I wasn't a performer, I'd be a doctor of some sort, whether it was a surgeon or a psychotherapist or something, because I just really love human behavior and how people patterns. And I'm a big journal writer. I've been writing in my journal since I was a kid. And so I love when I kind of read back in my journals and I go like, oh, wow, look at that. You learned that lesson finally. Or, wow, still doing that. Seriously. So it's kind of my little, I don't know, personal memoir to myself of kind of just to stay in touch with where I am and what I'm doing. And at the end of the day, you know, you'll make money and you'll lose money, but when you strip it all away, you're all you've got. So you better be your own best friend and love who you are and be happy with who you are, because you can only be as happy with, you know, with other people as you are with yourself. So
no doubt about it. And it's funny you talk about, you know, just people's behavior and stuff, because I think if you talk more often than not, if you talk to a real true avid Disney fan, I think one of our favorite pastimes is to sit on a park bench and people watch and drink a glass of wine or grab a beer or get some popcorn and just watch people, because it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I love to. Do you do? I love to. Okay, I like to name. I'm like, okay, that person's name is Fiona, and this is the deal. Okay, so this is their first date, and I create this like whole scenario. I like to. I do that in airports too. You gotta pass the time when your flight's delayed. So I like to decide what the dynamic is and what's happening.
A friend and I just made an entire backstory for a guy who was meeting the love of his life for the first time on a blind date when we were out to dinner recently. So I can appreciate that pastime. I love it.
I know. Well, it's great because, I mean, it forces you to really be spontaneous. I mean, it's fun and you kind of, you know, and who knows if it's ever correct, but
sure,
it certainly is fun. And it's fun when you have someone who will do it with you.
Yes. So I have a very random question. I mean, it's probably not to you, but tell us about Finding Craftland. It looks intriguing, and I knew nothing about it, but now I've sat and read more about it. But I'd love to hear how you tell the listeners about that project.
Oh, that's so funny. Finding Craftland is this really gluttonous, heartwarming, kooky documentary about a man named Richard Craft, who is one of the top composer agents for Broadway and film composers. I mean, one out of three feature films that you see, like Danny Elfman, John Bryant, like the composer for that film, one out of three is, or at least probably it's more than that now, are his clients. And so he reps super talented people, Alan Menken and Mark Scheinman and all these wonderful people on Broadway and film. So he is a huge Disney-phile and has an incredible collection. I mean, the original Dumbo is hanging in his living room, and he just has more Disney than is at Disney, literally. So he was at Disney with his son. He and his son had this whole ritual where they would go around the world riding roller coasters. And so every year they would take a buddy trip and go all these different places, and so they always would end up at Disney World at some point. So they were at Disney World shortly after the top seven must-sees went on, and they obviously knew the show before me, and so then they saw my version, and Richard's son, who at the time was a teenager, was like, oh my gosh, Dad, we should do a countdown of our stuff. So at the time I was in Charlotte, and my agent there calls me and says, okay, so there's this man who wants you to come to L.A. and do a movie. And so, of course, you know, you're like, uh-huh, I bet he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So it was really funny because my agent said, well, here's his number. He said, you know, please call. He sent all these periodicals that had done big stories on him so that he was trying to validate that he was not a total freak of nature.
Right.
So I called him, and he was the nicest guy, but he was just obviously so passionate about Disney and his collection, and it's Disney and pop culture stuff. And so we spoke, and he said, listen, I'd love to fly you out to L.A., and I want to shoot this documentary in my home and all about my collection and all about my life. And so I was like, sure, I'll drop some breadcrumbs, tell people where I am. Why not? So I flew out to L.A., and it ended up being a whirlwind, like 4 days. We shot like 16 hours a day. It was insane. It was like 22 wardrobe changes. He had stylists from E! And makeup artists. It was the biggest high-budget home movie you've ever imagined in your life. And so what happened was, as we began to do it, was, you know, I'm talking about his collection, and it's very bubblegum and very sweet and very high energy and over the top. But what we were realizing was the story behind it is his brother had died. He had Crohn's disease. And at that time, there was really not, like there is now, any sort of way to manage it. So when they would go to Disneyland, because he's from out here, that was when his brother was feeling good and he was healthy. So for him, Disneyland was this beautiful representation of health and happiness with his family. So that storyline was woven in through the whole, I have millions of dollars and millions of things. And so it became this kooky little movie that ended up in film festivals all around the world. And people just started loving it because it was so over the top and so just bigger than life. And so that's how I ended up, I was thinking about moving to LA, and then they did a premiere of the movie at Paramount Studios, and it was this whole big deal. And I ended up, that was sort of the ceiling of the, I'm definitely moving to LA. And so I ended up going around the country with Richard and the filmmaker, director Adam and his son, and we would go to film festivals, and we went to Pixar, and they showed the movie there. And it was just like a really cool couple years of promoting it, but it's kind of become this little sort of cult thing that you can't really get anywhere, I don't think, because we used a lot of, when they made the film, a lot of the music and stuff were Richard's clients, but he didn't do licensing and stuff for it, so can't really distribute it if it's not licensed music, so.
Mm. Oh, that was my next question, because the little, like on YouTube, you can find probably what amounts to almost like teaser trailers.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place. There's McDonald's Happy Meal characters and Broadway playbills, and I'm like, what on earth is this movie? And then it's really, as you're talking and telling me that there's also a, you know, a story behind it, and yeah, it would be amazing if you could get your hands on it sometime, but I guess we can keep an eye out for if he ever decides to
get
that out somehow.
Clients, he's like, I guess my clients wouldn't sue me, would they? So, but now it's very cool because, you know, Richard is a really, really cool man with a huge heart who lives his life just full throttle, and you know, initially the story was he was thinking, wow, people, you kind of love to hate him because he's like, hey, I want to take ballroom dance lessons. So he does. And then he ends up competing in Las Vegas. And then he wanted to go jump out of an airplane. So he does it. I mean, he just does and lives, and his bucket list is kind of like his everyday thing. But then when you layer in the heart of it, you kind of go like, wow, he really is. He's a really good guy with this just over-the-top lifestyle.
Just passion.
Best for life.
Yeah. So we became friends as a result, and the filmmakers as well. And so it's just been a really fun thing, and I got to, again, be a part of a really cool project and made some really good lifelong friends.
Very neat.
So tell us a little bit more about filming the must-dos at Disney. How much of that is scripted versus just you and your personality and you just coming up with stuff off the top of your head?
Well, a lot, obviously, the specifics about magic bands and, you know, really specific things about tickets, those are very scripted. I need to have those words perfect.
Okay.
So everything is, no one's going, hey, what that girl said.
Right.
I don't want that liability. So
sure.
That's all scripted, and there are other little elements that are as well. But a lot of the me running around and sticking my head in garbage cans or doing whatever I'm doing, a lot of that is just me, what they call B-roll, and just, you know, or if I'm interacting with characters, a lot of that is just me
being you,
ad-libbing and being me and riffing off of what I'm getting. Like all the Gaston stuff where we're like, prom pose. I mean, that's just me.
I love it.
I know, it's so funny. That guy was so nice, and it was so hot when we shot that. It was in the middle of July, and it was Florida.
Yeah.
So he was so nice, and I just kept looking at him. I'm like, man, you're a trooper. He's like, I know. So, but a lot of that is me just being part of it. But it really is who I am. I mean, I'm not necessarily playing a role of Stacey. I mean, I am a pretty energetic, upbeat, positive person. So a lot of it, I just kind of, when I get there even, I turn on the TV and watch myself for a second just to kind of reconnect with that energy and so that you don't see. And as people who have been around with me since 2005, I mean, there is still some footage in there from 2005, 2007, 2009, 2011. So
sure.
I like to try to make sure that I'm keeping the same. And obviously the Must Do Disney show changed the tone a bit because you had the in-studio green screen component. And some people initially who were really diehard Top 7 fans kind of thought I would get emails or notes like, are you okay? You don't look like you're having fun. And you're so serious. And I wasn't. I mean, I was having fun. I wasn't not invested. It's just, it was a different, they were going for a different tone, kind of more of an entertainment studio kind of contrast
sure.
to the park stuff. So I think it took some people a little time to embrace Must Do Disney because I think they felt like maybe it was too tame compared to Top 7, because Top 7 is like, are you kidding me? I mean, that thing is crazy. I love it. I mean, I watch it sometimes still and I go like, oh my gosh. I mean, we didn't stop. It was, and then the editors are incredible. So it just, I mean, you just want to do every single thing twice when you watch that show, don't you? I mean, even Must Do, it's like,
sure.
You kind of, it gears you up for sure.
So Sam, one of our other co-hosts, wanted me to ask you, he wanted me to ask you if the Lazy People on the Lazy River was scripted or was that you?
That was...
All the Lazy People on the Lazy...
That was kind of a combination of me and the writer at the time of that, of the Top 7.
That's another one that stands out along with the Summit Plummet.
Yeah, Summit Plummet and the water-powered wedgies are free with admission, which is no longer in there.
Oh, it's not. I just watched that. Yeah. To say, we have a YouTube channel that has some of our favorite Stacey clips and... For the Disney Nerds podcast, and Sam has some clips from the 2005, 2007, 2009 updates, and it's fun to kind of watch the history.
Evolution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like a game to go like, what's there and what isn't? And I have to say, I mean, I'm the one you see on camera, but there is just a fleet of incredibly talented, generous people, producers, writers. Paul Menudis was the writer of Top 7 Must-Sees, and he and I just, I think, shared a brain. I think we were brother and sister in a different life. And so once I started working with him and I really kind of clicked into his energy, I mean, it was great while we were filming. There were times when it was like, hey, what do we want to do here? And we would just click into each other's sensibility, and it was so wonderful. We really got along great, and he really got to know me, obviously, over the years. And now John McCall, he's an incredible guy, and you know, so it's really, really nice. I mean, I like I said, I am the one you see on camera, but the hair and makeup and wardrobe people, producers, all the crew, I mean, it's an incredible, incredible operation, and everyone works really, really hard and supports me and makes my life really, really great for however long I'm there, whether it's 36 hours or 7 days. So I really want to just offer my support and gratitude to them, because they're really amazing, and all the craft service people who keep me fed and who make sure there's enough vegetables, you know,
sure.
and water. I drink about, I don't know, 4 cases of water a day. It's crazy. So they just take really good care of me, and they have from day one. So I really, really, I just want them to be acknowledged, because I don't do it for myself in any way.
Do you, when you're out there, do you get a chance to kind of slow down just a little bit, maybe a day here, a day there, where you can just kind of maybe enjoy the parks?
I enjoy the park with the camera on me. They kind of fly me in the night before, and then I'm up at dawn, ready to go. Many times we'll shoot the nighttime things before sunrise. So sometimes it's actually, you know, all the downtown Disney stuff is at night, for sure. But sometimes there's a few things that we do before the sun comes up. So I pretty much kind of come in and do my thing, and then depending on my schedule here, I usually have to get back. So there's not much time in between. And I really kind of, I'm there for a specific purpose, and I want to make sure that, I mean, I'll do 45 takes. If you want 2 takes, 50 takes, I'll do however many takes you want. But I kind of feel like it's my responsibility to be rested and prepared and really on the top of my game. So when I'm there, I try to really just focus on what they are needing from me, and so that I'm not dragging down the process.
Sure.
I'd rather they hold for rain and storms and not for Stacy to have a nap.
Right.
So I've only been to the park one time, actually not when I was filming for the shows. It was actually when I was in Florida promoting Finding Craftland at a festival there, and we went to the park one day, and the filmmakers thought it was just hysterical to let me get ahead of them on purpose, which I figured out a few hours into the day. I'm a real quick study, right? And they would yell, Stacy, what do you want to tell? And people would look and be like, what? And they just thought it was hysterical to have people mock me. So they did that
That's
for
so
like
funny.
Half a day. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. Who better to lead you around the parks than Stacy from the set,
yeah.
Drop 7?
That's right.
It was fun.
So what other places... You said VO Buzz Weekly, and we obviously can visit with you, and we're in Orlando on our resort TV. Are there other places that people can connect with you online? I noticed that you do have a website, if you'd like to share that with people. And I love that you have some donations for different animal rights group. Is that to get autographed pictures? Can you tell us a little about your website and where else we can find you?
Yeah, thank you. Stacy J. Aswad, Stacy with an E, jaswad.com. If you click on try to update my news and tell people what's going on. I'm a little bit behind on that at the moment. But on the charity link, you can get an autographed picture, and I'll personalize it. And a lot of people sometimes like their favorite line, pretzels and beer or whatever.
Oh,
and I'll personalize it, and we get that out really quickly. And then it's a $20 donation, and all of that goes to various animal rescue groups and some environmental, but a lot of just animal advocacy and, you know, organizations that are helping with prevention of animal cruelty and animal homelessness and just animal rights in general. It's a passion for me to be a part of ending animal homelessness in my lifetime. That is a major goal and dream of mine, is to have no animal shelters anywhere in the world, that animals are spayed and neutered and have homes and people care for them and they're not being abused. And so whatever I can do, whatever resources or voice I can lend to that, I do. And I love giving people autographs. And if they would like to make that donation, every single penny goes to various groups. And if there's certainly, there's been times when there's been some sort of natural disaster. And so that month or that for 2 months, I'll send everything to organizations benefiting the animals and the people that have been affected by a disaster. So that's there. And then I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at Stacey J. Aswad. And then on Facebook, I have a host Stacey J. Aswad page. I'm barely on my personal page, so I'm not being snotty and diva. I just am really not there. So just you'll get me better on the host Stacey J. Aswad page. And it is me. I again, depending on my life, I'm more active than other times, but I do try to post and interact with people as best I can, as much as I can. So those are kind of my social media, and then VO Buzz Weekly. And I just did a book for Random House called Revolution by Deborah Wiles, and that just came out a couple weeks ago. That was really fun. I was 12-year-old girl named Sunny from Mississippi in the summer of like the Civil Rights summer. So that was a really cool experience.
Very
and
nice.
For Random House was really fun. So, and I have radio spots running, and you can kind of see me and hear me in various places. I never exactly know. I'm some of the voices in the Final Fantasy Lightning Returns game.
Oh, fun.
So I'm kind of, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. That's kind of what's going on in my audition every day for whatever I'm right for. And I just kind of do my thing.
That's fantastic. We appreciate you so much for coming on. I know our listeners are going to be very, very happy. We hadn't said anything yet. We can kind of been hinting that we had some big news coming up, but I'm sure everyone's going to be very, very excited once this is all edited and put together.
Well, thank you so much, and please share so that I can help you. You know, we'll make sure every ear is tuned in when the time comes. So I really appreciate you having me on, and for all you guys do, and for your passion and your focus. It's great.
Thank you so much for coming on and just being you.
Thank you. Well, it's my favorite role to play, I always say.
Hi, guys. This is Ed. Thanks for listening to that great interview with Stacey. And Stacey, thank you once again. We really appreciated you coming on our show for that interview. It was a really, really fun one. We're going to let our trivia contest go on one more week. So if you want to email us with the answer to this question, there are two circumstances of Christmas in Walt Disney World attractions. Email the show at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com and let us know what those two attractions are, and you'll win a Disney Nerds pin. So again, thank you for listening, and thanks to Stacey. For Jimmy, Jennifer, and this is Ed, thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Kungaloosh.